CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batsa with Tom Jossin. He and Bill Roggio keep the Long War Journal with their colleagues, a chronology and an analysis of the vast landscape of the UMA. The State Department watches it too. And in the year beginning podcast, Generation Jihad, from Tom and Bill, they comment upon the State Department's report. Given that it's about the end of 2020, here at the end of 2021, it still has weight and significance. Tom, how do you measure the State Department's understanding of the threat, the transnational threat of al-Qaeda at this moment?
Well, John, to give some background here for listeners, every year the State Department produces its country reports on terrorism, and we review and go through it because it provides a window into how the U.S. government is looking at the threat of jihadism and other types of terrorism. And this report, unfortunately, it came out in December of 2021 as a review for 2020. Now, that's obviously very odd. It's reviewing the 12 calendar months of 2020, a full 12 calendar months removed almost from those events. So it's a delayed report, unfortunately. And some of the verbiage or some of the passages in the report are clearly dated, including these passages dealing with the Afghan security forces, which obviously have crumbled. But the report still provides an overview of how the U.S. government is looking at the terrorist threat. And what you'll see is that the triumphalist rhetoric we've seen in the past about al-Qaeda in particular is largely gone. You don't see that in this report. You see basically warnings that al-Qaeda is exploiting ungoverned spaces and is basically growing in certain areas, and that arms of al-Qaeda, which they call affiliates, really regional branches of al-Qaeda, remain some of the most lethal terrorist organizations in the world, really, in these different areas across the Middle East and Africa. The report also says it issues a similar warning about ISIS, that ISIS retains a global network that is carrying out a vast amount of violence on a weekly basis. And so basically what you have is, I think it's another metric where you can see the U.S. has sort of pulled back and retreated from what was formerly known as the war on terror, even allowed the Afghan government to fall to the Taliban and al-Qaeda, and is really sort of, you know, basically doesn't want to do this anymore, doesn't want to fight the jihadists. Where meanwhile, you have this assessment saying, well, actually, the jihad has expanded after all these years.
Two places in Central Asia that are critical here because there's no clarity. The first, the obvious, Iran. The mention of Iran and al-Qaeda, the mention of Iran and the Taliban, what does that mean for Washington today, Tom?
You know, it's one of the things, again, we've talked about this a lot of times, John, that in Washington, anytime you bring up the relationship between Iran, the Iranian regime, and al-Qaeda, you're immediately confronted by a barrage of ignorant accusations and statements. I mean, there's a lot of people who assume the two can't work together. That's false. There's all sorts of abundant, solid evidence showing that the two have worked together since the early 1990s. They certainly have their differences, but they've also managed to forge agreements on multiple occasions. And this report from the State Department, once again, notes that senior al-Qaeda personnel are operating inside Iran, and they're planning and overseeing terrorist operations from inside Iran. The bottom line is that this is the type of thing, official statement from the State Department, which has made such statements since at least 2011, that contradicts the prevailing wisdom, the conventional wisdom in Washington. You know, it's sort of this weird, strange cognitive dissonance that goes on, is that the official government intelligence analysis that's produced says that there is this relationship between the two and it's an ongoing concern. While meanwhile, many in Washington pretend that it's some sort of scheme to cook up a war against Iran, which is really stupid. But in any event, this report, once again, it came out in December, so just last month, just a few weeks ago, once again states as a fact that al-Qaeda has senior personnel in Iran and is planning terrorist operations from there.
The second country, and it's most recent, but it's what we have, is Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan is now in turmoil. The reports are incomplete. More than 100 dead. We can only guess at the state of affairs in the country, given the challenge of the national leadership by what I've seen is large crowds of young men in town squares in the cold. Kazakhstan is a vast territory. However, I cannot remove the thoughts that the Afghanistan collapse now precedes what appears to be the collapse of governance in Kazakhstan. I note that China's concern, Xi Jinping's government is debated whether they should send authorities or troops into Kazakhstan. We know that Moscow has sent troops or authorities into Kazakhstan. Tom, I've seen nothing that links Afghanistan and Kazakhstan. I'm just checking with you. Maybe it's a coincidence in time, or maybe we should take seriously that all of Central Asia is destabilized with the exit of the U.S. and NATO.
Yeah, you know, John, I don't really know what the answer is. It's something I'm reading up on. I would say is this. I think there are plenty of Central Asian jihadists in Afghanistan who helped the Taliban win the war. Many of these Central Asian jihadists are Al-Qaeda affiliated. Some of them are ISIS affiliated, so they're against the Taliban, Al-Qaeda. But you have plenty this pool of Central Asian jihadists who are battle hardened now from the war in Afghanistan. We're itching to go back to their home countries throughout Central Asia and really lash out and get to work in provoking violence in their home countries. So I think it's part of the story here of the fall of Afghanistan to keep watching going forward. I don't want to say that that's what's responsible for what's happening in Kazakhstan whatsoever. I'm just saying it's part of the story to look for going forward.
Yes, where I paid attention, Tom, and it's so incomplete, there's no transparency in the reporting, is that there was a report early on that three of the policemen challenging the protesters were beheaded. And I paid attention to that because it didn't seem like normal practice of people who were worried about the price of gasoline or the price of electricity. We come now to the fourth thing that you and Tom touch upon, which is Pakistan. We've established that Pakistan is the author of much of the Taliban's trouble. There's also a Taliban in Pakistan. Is there any reason to believe that the Pakistani Taliban has grown stronger or become more ambitious since the Taliban took control in Kabul?
Yeah, you know, the Pakistani Taliban had a one-month ceasefire with the Pakistani government last year. In December, they announced an end to that. Now, the Pakistani Taliban is basically an Al-Qaeda cutout. Al-Qaeda really stood up the group for its own purposes. It's a sort of a clever play on their behalf. They wanted an organization that was loyal to the Afghan Taliban's emir, but still could be used as a card against the Pakistani government, the Pakistani state, which is in bed with the Afghan Taliban, of course. So it's part of this, what I call this wheel of jihad, where you have Pakistani states in league with the Afghan Taliban, but the Afghan Taliban is in bed with Al-Qaeda and other parties, which are actually seeking to destabilize the Pakistani state. There's no evidence the Pakistani Taliban has been reined in so far. There's a lot of evidence that they're looking to basically reconquer territory in northern Pakistan. And so this is going to be one of those spillover effects of the defeat in Afghanistan to keep your eyes out for.
Finally, drone strikes in Syria. There's no clarity here. So I'll just mention, Tom, that it is the single weapon that the U.S. is now using. And within 30 seconds, can you say that it's more or less effective today than it was, say, 10 years ago, droning?
I think I'm very skeptical of the drone campaign right now because it's not being clearly articulated by any policymakers or military officials. They're not really explaining who they're going after or why. And when they incur civilian casualties in these drone strikes, it just raises public scrutiny and skepticism, rightfully so, without any justifications for the strikes.
Tom Jocelyn, he and Bill Rogeau keep the Long War Journal. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.